I'm Ava Hartling. Welcome back to the Brand is Female podcast. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandisfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. Today, I'm speaking with Taylor Frankel of Nudestix, who's managed to basically achieve what every beauty founder dreams of doing, meaning building an absolute unicorn within the beauty industry. Since her teenage years, Taylor's been building her beauty empire with the help of her sister Allie and her mom Jenny, who's a chemical engineer with experience at MAC and CoverFX. When they identified a gap in the market for easy-to-use multi-purpose cosmetics, they launched Nudestix in 2014. The brand quickly gained traction, and the rest is history. It's now carried in over 2,500 stores across the world, including Sephora and Ulta. As Chief Brand Officer, Taylor now oversees creative direction, marketing, PR, and social media for the brand. In recent years, the brand has expanded into skincare and body care, launching the Nude Body Collection, and they brought on Sophia Richie Grange as a brand ambassador and investor. Today, the company is worth a cool $100 million. Listen to find out how Taylor and her team have created this absolute success story. Taylor, it's such a pleasure having you on The Brand is Female. Thanks for making time today.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
I can't wait to get into all of the wonderful insights into your journey with Nudestix. But before we talk about the brand and what you've built, I like to go down memory lane with guests. This is typically how I start these conversations. And I want to know, growing up, what kind of future career were you picturing for yourself? What kind of professional life were you envisioning? And was it at all connected to what you're actually doing today?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I was never one to have this vision of exactly what I wanted to be when I grew up. You know, my sister Allie, who is one of the co-founders of Nudestix, she always had this vision that she would be a doctor. And I think there was a lot of insecurity growing up because I didn't have a very clear end goal of where I wanted to be. Both my parents were entrepreneurs. So my dad had a business while I was growing up. It was a lighting wholesale business. And my mom, Jenny, who is also the co-founder of Nudestix, was in the beauty industry and had a company at the time. Growing up, I loved anything creative. So I loved art, I loved paint, but I also played competitive sports. So one sport in particular was tennis. And up until kind of my last year of high school, I thought I would go down like that competitive route, not necessarily to become a professional tennis player, but kind of get as far as I could on that journey. And I also had some opportunities to model while I was in high school. And that just kind of happened through, you know, an interest to get into the creative industry because I love photography as well. So I tried to just do a variety of different things to see, okay, like where did my interests really lie or how could I take these passions and really build a career out of them? And I guess it ended up serving me well because, you know, I had the opportunity to have my hands in a few different things and to see, you know, the behind the scenes of just different career paths, one being entrepreneurship through my parents being business owners, two, more from a creative perspective, I would say the photography modeling route, which, you know, I think did give me not only insights, but also I had the ability to get my hands dirty in like the marketing creative field. Like I loved being on set. I loved being around creative people. Like I knew that that was something that I didn't necessarily, I would say, envision it as a career long-term because it wasn't something that I necessarily grew up with. I grew up in a Jewish community and, you know, I think every single one of my friends either wanted to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an accountant or something that was like very, very clear. There was a very clear path to get there. And I just wanted to be around people that I loved, creative people. And so I was like, okay, I don't really know how to make a career out of this. And, you know, I would say, I wouldn't say I discovered my skill set right away. I think Nudestix actually allowed me to really discover where what I was good at and then kind of go with it. But I think that was a little bit of a long-winded answer, but I didn't really have one thing. Like I know, yeah, that's not very helpful, but.
No, you picked from all these things, all the interests that you've mentioned. I can see how, you know, this contributes to what you're actually doing today. It's a little bit of all these elements coming together. You were quite young when you started the business. You're still quite young. But I know in the early days of being a beauty founder, you know, you were still a teenager. And obviously your mom, who comes from the industry and who's your co-founder, probably was able to guide you and kind of lead you through steps and in making this dream come true. But tell me about the first vision for Nude Sticks. And I'm guessing, you know, you were consuming a variety of products, but what was the spark? What was the idea that made you want to pursue this at such a young age?
So I have to give a little bit of background on my mom, obviously, for everything to come together. But my mom, Jenny, she's a chemical engineer and she's been developing cosmetics for over 20 years. So she actually started her career at MAC Cosmetics, developing some of their iconic products. And then later, with a few partners, developed a brand called Cover Effects, which is another Canadian brand, beautiful brand that was launched in 2000.
And another kind of legend in the industry.
Exactly. And so she had built that for about 12 or so years until she decided to take this 2-year non-compete, eat, pray, love moment and really just focus on my sister and I. It was the first time in her life where she actually had the freedom and the flexibility to, in her words, she says, be a mom and just be home and like have lunch with friends and like all the little luxuries that, you know, she didn't necessarily have when we were younger. And she realized very quickly through our eyes that we viewed beauty very differently. And this was through conversations we would have throughout those years, because what do you talk about with your two teenage daughters? You talk about things that inspire you, whether it's beauty or fashion or other. And beauty just so happened to come up at dinner table conversations, family events, you know, celebrations, because, you know, that's the time where you're putting on makeup and you're, you know, you're going through that experience. And my sister and I would constantly talk about how we felt like there was nothing else out there for us in the beauty industry. And my mom would say, what do you mean? Like, if there's any industry that has way too many products, it's beauty. How is there nothing out there for you? And we would say, well, you know, we just want less is more beauty. We want something that's easy and quick and on the go. And we just want to look like ourselves, but better. And this was in 2012, 2013, when the beauty industry then looked very different. Less is more was not a thing. It was more is more makeup, artistry, heavy contour, heavy color. And as beautiful as it was, it wasn't necessarily relatable to the everyday woman who is a mom, a student, you know, is not a makeup artist and just wants a touch of color to look and feel like the best version of herself.
Yeah, I remember those YouTube videos that were so long because the technique to get your contour right, you know, took forever. So I know what you're referring to. I remember those days.
Yeah, it was definitely an era, the YouTube era. And as entertaining as it was, you know, it wasn't relatable. Like I would watch the videos, you know, I would spend hours watching videos, but when it came to actually doing my own makeup, I maybe had spent less than 10 minutes doing it because either I was hitting snooze on my alarm clock because I'd rather sleep in. Maybe I was doing a workout in the morning or I just couldn't be bothered. And I think that's a lot of women out there who just have so many different things going on in their lives where their makeup routine maybe isn't a priority often. So that's when we came together and we said, well, wait a second, there is a white space. And I think we were fortunate enough where we grew up in the beauty industry. So I would say we were fairly conscious and we had a fairly good perspective of what existed out there because, you know, whether they're in beauty or other, like they end up bringing their work home. So we were lucky enough that that was beauty. And that kind of served as this inspiration. It was really this modern day woman lifestyle and our lifestyle that really allowed us to see that gap in the industry. And we kind of went from there and we said, okay, let's see how this goes. We went into product development. We sourced a few different packaging and components and realized very quickly that we wanted something that was really easy, quick. So we decided on exclusively using pencils. And that's where this name Nude Sticks comes from. Because we said, okay, there's so many artistry brands out there. Like we don't care for the blues and the pinks and all of these bright colors. We just want shades of nude that look good on everyone. And then we wanted pencils because they were easy to use. You didn't need brushes. It felt modern. It didn't feel like, you know, your quote unquote, your mother's makeup. It was like very modern and sleek and chic. And hence the name Nude Sticks. So that's kind of how it came to be. And then here we are 10 years later. So really quick summary.
Yeah, no, and love the story behind it, which is really, it happened very organically. And obviously your mom's experience in the field and her connections in the industry helped make this possible. And I think for young women who dream of starting a business or have an idea for creating a product, and you know, many do in the beauty space, there's also a lot of challenges around finding the right suppliers, having the capital to be able to produce the numbers that are required for minimum orders, and then finding retail partners. And today, Nude Sticks is available in all leading beauty retailers, obviously, including Sephora. How did you get there? And what kind of conversations were you having with your mom? Because she could have said, great idea, but I want
want you to focus on school and like, we'll do that later, right? What was kind of the intention or discussions you were having at that time to make this dream a possibility?
So when we started Newsticks, I was 17, my sister was 14. So I was in my last year of high school, my sister was in her first. And I remember when my mom sat us down and she said, okay, I really think that there's a gap here. Like, I've been listening to you guys and I've been seeing beauty through your eyes, and you're 100% right. There is this white space. And she said, do you girls want to do this? Like, do you really want to take this on? And I think regardless of how old you are or in any stage of your business, I do think that a little bit of naivety is important. Because if you're hyper aware and conscious of like every single little problem that can possibly happen, like I think fear can really debilitate you. And so as young as we were, I think we had this almost blind confidence to say, yeah, like, why not? Like, let's do it. We had raised money because you mentioned capital. It was kind of like a friends and family raise at first. And all of our employees became shareholders of the business because we didn't have the capital to pay a salary. For a while, you know, my sister and I didn't pay a salary, which we had a roof over our head. You know, we were living with our parents at the time. So, you know, we obviously didn't have additional personal expenses. And so it really became like this family undertaking of like, okay, we're all in. The family's in, you know, we're really not only investing capital, but we're also investing like all of our time, our energy. We're sacrificing a lot here. And my mom was, I would say, very communicative in that to say, but if we're doing this, like you have to understand that this is a risk and it might fail. And my mom has always been very transparent, having those conversations with my sister and I, and we still wanted to take the leap of faith because we had so much passion behind this brand and this white space. And so because we were still in school, we had our meetings every Sunday at the kitchen table. And that was our working session where we would talk about marketing, social media. I was leading all of our social platforms at the time, and that was really Instagram and Snapchat. And so that was when we would do our postings. That's when we would take our content. That's when we would have our product development meetings. That's when we would have our marketing meetings. So that was how we coordinated at first when we were still in school. Then I went to university for about a year and a half. And that's when the business started to take off a little because we had launched a retailer called Space & K. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Space & K, but they're a small boutique apothecary retailer originated in the UK, and they have a few locations in the US as well. They're definitely more premium, more luxe than your traditional beauty retailer. And my mom had known Nikki Kennard, the NK of Space & K, from her past life. So she decided to coordinate a meeting. And at the time, we only had lab samples and we had a story. And our story was this mother-daughter story. It was about minimalist multitasking makeup. It was about speaking to beauty in this less is more way, clean beauty, sustainable, all of the things that really weren't being discussed at the time in 2013, 2014. And Nikki, she's like one of the hardest people to impress. She said, you know, I love this concept. No one's bringing anything that's like cool, indie, modern, millennial to the table. You know, at that time, like, I want to take a chance. So in exchange for PR, so we were able to utilize their entire internal PR resource, we had given them a 3-month exclusivity. And that was a super pivotal launch for us because we had the opportunity to utilize their in-house PR. It garnered a lot of buzz and conversation in the beauty industry. And just for anyone listening, if you're kind of like more Gen Z or millennial, back then, I would say influencers were just starting to become a little bit more of a mainstream marketing vehicle. But at the time, it was really bloggers and traditional media. And that's how you would get your name out there. And so with Space & K, like, they would pay for events and they would pay for us to travel, whether it was to New York or to the UK to meet with media. And then we obviously had organic social, and that's how we built our business over the first, you know, 6 to 12 months. And because of that PR, we had retailers approaching us. So that was when Sephora reached out to us, which obviously, as you know, once you launch Sephora, it's amazing because they have a huge marketing vehicle behind them and they have the exposure, they have being affiliated with them. So that first smaller apothecary launch was incredibly meaningful to the brand.
And I think that's when you focused full-time on Newsticks and left university at that time, which I'm guessing wasn't an easy decision. And I'm also curious to know, in your journey, you had to learn all of this, you know, just jumping in. Your mom was able to guide you, but still you were a very important part of the decision-making around the brand. And this was new for you. You hadn't done this before. In fact, you hadn't really worked in the professional field, or at least in beauty. How did it feel at that time? And also that decision to leave school, focus full time on the brand. Was there any hesitation, or it was very clear that this was your path forward?
No, there was a lot of hesitation. I had done 1 year in business school in Toronto, and it was at a point where, because we were launching new markets and I was traveling a lot, because a part of my role was going to new markets and to do press, media, education, meet with stores, meet with retailers, I wasn't present at school. So both, I feel like I wasn't putting my all. And so I actually remember talking to my mom at the time, and I was feeling really stressed. And I think she obviously wanted me to stay in the business, but she knew that it would feel very biased if she were to give me that advice. So I actually had reached out to a family friend of mine who was in business. And I remember him saying, school will always be there, but this opportunity with Nudestakes may not be. And that was the trigger to me saying, you're 100% right. I need to really put my all into Nudestakes and see what happens. But it was very scary, especially growing up in a community where you do not drop out of school. And even just being a beauty entrepreneur was a very untraditional path. So I was very scared. And I also think I definitely felt judged because the business was still very small at the time. And so, you know, as someone who is very young, who obviously cares about what your peers think about you, it could be very scary. And then not knowing obviously what the future holds with your business. So I would say I was very lucky that I had support from my family, because I think there's a lot of people who do this, don't have the support from their family. So that was obviously super important for me. But I think what's so important when you're starting a business, and I think there's a lot of people who obviously bootstrap their business who will need to, you know, work a full-time job or work part-time while focusing on their business. But to build a business, to start a business, you need to be so ingrained and invested in that entity. So I personally felt like it really allowed me to like push the business forward when I knew that everything was at stake. Like when I had that pressure to say, okay, this cannot fail because I now have everything on the line. You know, school is no longer there. I can maybe go back to school in the future, but essentially I had the pressure, or I felt that at least in my head. So that I felt like, okay, I cannot fail because I have this peer judgment. And then I also had our family. Everything was at stake with our family. And so as a family, we said, okay, this cannot fail. And I think when you have that mindset and you have a little bit of fire, as a lack of a better term, like you have a little bit of fire under your bum, I think that it's really important. At least for me and my personality, I need that stress. I need that anxiety to really push forward.
This season of the Brand is Female podcast is made possible with the support of TD Women in Enterprise and Dirt About Confidently Building You. As a woman entrepreneur myself, I know I need all the support I can get. It takes sound advice plus guidance to the right connections, tools, and resources. What's great about TD services for women in business is their collaborative approach. TD can facilitate and connect you to workshops, coaching, and mentorship, and they engage other like-minded business leaders in an authentic way so we can share experiences and learn from each other. TD Women in Enterprise has banking specialists who are able to be proactive in the advice and guidance they give to women in business.
What was one of the biggest lessons for you? Something that you learned maybe the hard way, maybe facing some obstacles. And obviously, I think you learned a lot through the experience up to this day. But what's something that strikes you as a lesson well learned?
I mean, honestly, there's so many. I would say there's only so many books that you can read about building a business. And even I was in business school. So, you know, I would learn about all of the little things. And I think that there still is value to it. But until you're actually doing it, like until you're actually on the ground and you're going through all of these little problems that come up, I think that's the best way that you can possibly learn. And I think having the mentality of it's okay to fail, but get up quickly, I think that's super important, because in any stage of your business, even here, now at year 10, there will always be problems. And the bigger your business gets, the bigger your problems get. So I think that, you know, there are hard skills that are super important to have going into business. You know, having the, I want to say thick skin is like one of the most important things that you can have, because whether it's working with different personalities in your business, whether it's getting no's, you're going to get a lot of no's, whether it's from retailers or other people who, you know, might not have the same vision as you do. And then I also think like having that tough, you know, that thick skin to be able to manage a variety of obstacles that come along your way. There are so many points that I can reflect on where it would have been so easy to quit. But I think the difference between people who are entrepreneurs and people who start a business and maybe people who think about starting a business is that ability to manage stress and fear and to have thick skin, because that's what's going to take you, you know, the long run. There's no such thing as an overnight success. I feel like I keep saying all these buzzwords, but they're there for a reason. And I was talking about this with someone the other day. It's like any perceived overnight success is actually a 10-year overnight success. And it could be because you're starting a business or you're building a brand, whatever it is. There are so many years before that where you were just, but you know, knocking on doors, all of the things to get where you are. And you don't necessarily see that. And people don't talk about it because it's not glamorous, right? So I think just always reminding yourself of that. And I always think of building a business as like an investment, right? Like if you're making an investment in a stock or in anything in life, like it's the long game, right? You're in it for the long game. You know, my biggest pet peeve are these like TikToks or YouTubers that will say, this is how you make $1 million in like a month. And I'm like, this is a scam. Like it is not real. And if that is real, there's something sketchy going on because it is so hard to do that. And I think just reminding yourself and speaking to people who have been through it and the reality of starting a business. And I also will say that entrepreneurship, I think, is very glamorized and is very romanticized. And it's no easy feat.
I was going to bring that up exactly. And I think in the beauty space, there's really kind of this myth because there has been, you know, a handful of highly successful women-founded, women-led companies, brands that have made it to the top. And we've really kind of glamorized the founder, right? And some of them have crashed hard as a result. Glossier comes to mind and the brand has reinvented itself. But there were a lot of challenges, you know, from the persona that was built up with that perfect beauty founder who can do no wrong and just has success after success. But we know behind the scenes, it's not always a reality. Did you ever feel like there was that pressure, especially in the beauty space, which is a very competitive, very saturated space as well? I'm interested in hearing what kind of discussions you're having with your mom and your family about how you're going to portray yourselves as founders and the image that you want to put out there about what you're doing for the company and who you are as humans too.
Yeah, no, this has always been a challenge for us because I'm a fairly private person and I use my personal platform to obviously talk about Nudestix and our journey. And I expose more behind the scenes of Nudestix on my TikTok where it's a little bit more vulnerable and you get to see like the ins and outs of like what we do here as a business and even just my thoughts and what I struggle with as a founder from like a mental health perspective and having to balance kind of your work and your personal life. But I think for us, we've always led with compassion for our team, compassion for our customers, and always leading with authenticity. You know, I would say one of the things I love about my mom is that as a leader, she is like incredibly authentic and she will say what's on her mind, whether you want to hear it or not. And I think that's, you know, a culture that we've hopefully allowed for in our offices and in our with our team as well, where, you know, in order to grow, you know, you need to be transparent and you need to be honest. And even on social, I think it's just super important to be very transparent with your community. And because we're super consumer facing and very founder led, upholding that image can be very challenging. So yeah, I always say being the face of your brand and being a founder led company is obviously a choice. It'd be a superpower in many ways, because I do believe that there's so many beautiful products out there and what's going to allow for that emotional connection to your brand. And I do think when you can step forward and almost lift the curtain, which historically was not done. If you think about all of the beauty brands, you know, the big beauty, whether it's Estee or L'Oreal, et cetera. And, you know, you have the luxury to, you know, speak to your consumers directly as well. However, there also is the flip side of you're then exposed as a founder and have to be super conscious of how you speak and how you're portrayed and how you're perceived by your community. So it's definitely a challenge. And we're working through it as we go.
Yeah, it's something you learn to juggle on a daily basis. What's the next big goal for Nudestix? You've obviously achieved very impressive growth over the past 10 years and products are available in large retailers. What's the next big milestone? In that, I also want to ask you how you reinvent yourselves, because I think there's always that challenge, especially in the beauty space and the makeup space, to stay relevant. There are new trends, there are new ingredients, there's new ways of manufacturing product. So how does this, you know, become part of your growth strategy?
So I would say the next step for us, especially over the next 1 to 2 years, is really refocusing on core. And when I say core, I mean, it's essentially going back to brand and what we do best at NudeStick. So going back to the root of the problem. And I was actually listening to someone talk about this recently. He was actually the founder of Waze. And he was just talking about, we focus so much on the solution always, but rarely do we actually focus on the root of the problem. And I think that as a brand, especially in a very competitive space, going back to the problem, the root of the problem, for me, then always goes back to why you developed your brand in the first place and like who your customer is. So that's really what our focus is going into the next 2 years. Why do we exist? What was the root of our problem when we launched NudeStick? And how do we essentially continue to speak to that message across everything we do? So whether it's product development, whether it's marketing. And I think a means to do that can be through a product that is essentially the essence of your brand, but also through how our consumers absorb content. So, you know, whether it's through social media, whether it's through other marketing channels. So that's going to be a really big focus. Obviously, newness and innovation is always going to drive client acquisition. It's always going to drive buzz and awareness, which will never go away. But I think we're really going to scale back on that and really focus on Heroes Q's core brand and going back to, you know, the root of why we exist. And I will say as well, to your second question of how do you stay relevant, I think a lot of it has to do with essentially finding ways to reinvent yourself without alienating your existing consumer. I think that's really important and honestly is always a challenge for us on how do you stay fresh, how do you stay relevant, but making sure that your core messaging is never lost. And so that's essentially what we're going through over the next, I would say, 3 to 4 months going into 2025 is solving that problem and actually working very closely as a team on, okay, now that we hit our 10 year, it's a pivotal year. It is a time where the industry has changed and shifted so much. The technology that we use has changed and shifted so much. So there is definitely a reinvention that needs to take place, but then merging that with our essence and our ethos. So I'm not going to reveal too much, but that's essentially what we're going through at the moment. And I think a really good example of that is you'll see brands like Armani. Their Armani Luminous Silk Foundation continues to be their best-selling SKU, but they continue to reinvent it, talk about it in different ways, you know, market it in fresh ways that resonate with their consumer. Even, I think it was Lancome, they just did this whole campaign, Mess with Lancome, that kind of spoke to their Heroes Q's, like their assortment that has been around for years, decades. And I think that's really how you can reinvent yourself, yet still speak to the essence of your brand. So it's a work in progress.
Well, you're a decade in doing it really well. So I look forward to seeing how you continue to stay so relevant. And you're obviously a success story for Canada and the beauty space. So congrats on everything you've achieved. Can't wait to see what comes next for NudeStick. And thank you so much for making time today. It was great getting the insights on your journey. And best of luck with what's coming.
Thank you.
Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of The Brand is Female podcast. It means a lot if you subscribe to our show, leave us a review, and engage with us on social media. A huge thank you to our team who makes these episodes possible. Lina Orbegozo Espinoza is our sound engineer. Jacqueline Cohen is our assistant producer, and Naomi Kixmuller-Gosley is our senior PR manager.